Hi, I'm Claudia. I'm a compulsive eater. And I am a sugar and a carb addict. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much for putting this together. And, you know, I just love to hear about your meeting being so small. And, you know, we can come together as compulsive eaters. And my experience has always been that, you know, when we are together in a room, you know, it's just the energy and the love, the acceptance, it just turns into such a beautiful event. So thank you for putting this together. And I want to welcome people that are newer to the program. If there's any newcomers that just came in, anybody that's struggling with abstinence especially, or just struggling with life in general, struggling with powerlessness, and I want to welcome everybody. I'm super, super grateful to be here. I'm super grateful that, you know, because of these 12 steps today, I can show up. You know, I have to tell you that I get really nervous when I speak in public. I don't enjoy it, and it's not something that I really look forward to that much. But I love to share the message, and this program has done so many amazing things in my life that I just feel like such responsibility to I want to tell you everything, and I know that that's not possible. But the first gratitude that I want to put out in this event about gratitude is thank you for saving my life. And I'm in a little bit of trouble because I'm really weepy today, and I've been really emotional and feeling a lot of gratitude from, you know, all the things that have happened in my life and going back in my story and looking at how things were. And, you know, when I say thank you for saving my life, is because when I got to my first OA meeting, which was 21 years ago, I was literally homicidal and suicidal. You know, every day I wanted to die. That was like what I wanted to do. And very depressed and very hopeless. So, you know, what's happened in the time that I've been here in OA has been an incredible transformation in almost every area of my life. I like to say when I speak and make my low self-esteem disclaimer, you know, like in car commercials, you know, when they tell you these are not actors, these are real people, you know, I want to say, you know, that I might look normal on the outside, but, you know, in the inside, you know, I'm definitely very insecure. I know that a symptom of my disease is having a very low self-esteem, and I know that's why speaking in public is hard for me. But, you know, I'm able to do this because of this program. And I was sharing with someone that today I had to do a 10-step because I was going to be here. And I was really scared. And the miracle is that I'm able to be here and show up. And, you know, I really hope that I'm going to bring a message that is useful for some of you. Today, you know, I like to wear different outfits when I speak. And this little outfit, you know, with the cherries is, you know, it's life is just a bowl of cherries when I'm working the steps. And, you know, it's so true. It's so true. It's been so true for me, you know, in big book terms, you know, what I've experienced in my life. And what I can tell you is what I've learned. But really what I keep on experiencing in my life is that when I rely and when I trust in a higher power, you know, what my higher power enables me to do is to match calamity with serenity. That's the promise. One of the many promises that the big book makes to us. So it's not really what I came here for. You know, when I came into OA, I share that, you know, there were two things that I wanted. One thing is I wanted to be thin. That was number one. And then the other thing I already shared with you is I really wanted to die. And I want to quickly take you just through my past and how my life was as a compulsive eater before I got to recovery. You know, and I've always loved food since I was a little kid. My first diet doctor was when I was 10 years old. And, you know, I was always, like, before I got to program, I was like a marginal yo-yo dieter. You know, I usually was like a mild, chubby person. I could diet well, but with a whole lot of effort. It took a huge effort to be like 20 pounds, 25 pounds overweight. When I was growing up, just the way my childhood was, I don't believe this caused my compulsive eating, but it didn't help. I didn't get a lot of tools. I did have sex abuse. I was bullied a lot, and I had a lots of loneliness as a kid. Anyway, so what happened to me is, you know, I was a yo-yo dieter, and I could lose 20 pounds for any special events, you know, weddings, quinceañeras. There I was losing my 20 pounds and looking kind of okay, you know, always trying on all of my closet to see what I was going to fit into this time. But, you know, the harder life got, the more my disease progressed. And before I came to OA, 21 years ago, I could no longer yo-yo down. I would try to diet every day, and by 10 a.m. in the morning, my face would be face down in the food. So I got to OA, and I really want to focus today on the amazing solution that the 12 steps offer us and the miracle that we have. And I can tell you that it's definitely for me one day at a time. I happen to work for a school, so every June I'm off, you know, and it's like, yay, it's summer. And I joke that every June I want to graduate from this program. And every June I want to pretend that I don't need to do this anymore. And by the grace of my higher power, I've been able to be abstinent for the last 13 years. But when I stop my spiritual practice, guess what happens to me? I become miserable. I become self-pitying in about a couple of weeks. So it's amazing how fast it happens. And again, you know, as a good compulsive overeater, every year I try it again. And you know that literature talks about that. And I see it for me every year, you know, when I try to graduate and think, oh no, you don't need to meditate. Oh no, you don't need to do this or that. So my all-time favorite piece of literature in recovery is the Big Book. And I love it so much because I believe that it really explains well how the disease, how my disease works. The number one thing that was so helpful for me to learn is that, you know, that I have a disease, that this is a disease and that it is a spiritual disease. You know, it's not that, you know, I have no willpower, and it's not that I'm a slob, and it's not that I'm weak. It's none of that. Nothing. It has nothing to do with intelligence, with ability to learn. It's got nothing to do with that. It's like, you know, there's the dimensions that we're used to, and then there's this, you know, separate. Everything that has helped me get through life, you know, school, you know, any hard situation, jobs, it's not going to help me with this disease. So this is a spiritual disease. That's the first thing that I learned when I came here that I didn't know. The second thing that I learned is that on my own, I am powerless. And, you know, I am not 50% powerless, and I am not 75% powerless. I'm not even 99% powerless. What I've heard is that if I hold on to that 1% of thinking that I can do this on my own, and that's usually my little head telling me that I can do this, what's going to happen to me is that that 1% is going to bring me down. It's going to bring me right back to compulsive eating. And to me, the way this translates, because, see, being a compulsive eater, I don't always make the connection of how things go. It's sort of like a pilot flying an airplane in the dark, you know, going by instruments. So for me, the sign that I am surrendering and that I am not doing this on my own is I have to be working with a sponsor. The minute that I think I've got this figured out and that I'm fine because I've been doing this for 21 years and I've been abstinent for 13, I know that I'm on my way out, on my way off the wagon. So I need a sponsor, and I can't do this on my own. I need you. I need my higher power. And then the other thing that was really transforming for me to learn is that my disease, you know, it's like it's a two-headed dragon, you know, so it's a fierceful dragon that is a lot more powerful than I am. And, you know, one of the heads of the dragon, it's the obsession of the mind, and the other head is the allergy of the body. And these two work together. You know, it's like a perfect storm. Thank you. It's like a perfect storm. And, you know, the first one leads me to the second one, and the second one leads me to the first one. So it's a merry-go-round, a toxic merry-go-round that once I'm in it on my own, I'm doomed. I'm not going to be able to get out of it. I need a higher power. I need you guys. In handling the allergy of the body, what the Big Book says is that Well, what it is, the allergy of the body, is it's a craving. And, you know, if there's any big book thumpers here, I apologize because I'm sure I'm not going to say this perfectly. But the way I understand it, you know, it's an allergy of the body that triggers a craving. And it's a craving that once it's switched on, you know, once it's turned on, once they call it the phenomenon of craving begins, it's going to be impossible for me to stop. I'm going to end up compulsively eating, you know, whatever form, you know, it's going to take. And it might take one day, it might take 2 days, it might take a month, but I'm going to end up face down in the food. And the allergy of the body is an abnormal reaction to certain foods that I need to abstain from. And it says, in the doctor's opinion, that the only solution that they can propose for the allergy of the body is entire abstinence. The way this came for me is through a weighed and measured food plan. I happened to land at an OAHAO meeting, and my sponsor gave me a food plan that her sponsor followed, and that's what's been working for me for 13 years, so I just do that. And by no means do I believe that this is the right way of doing it. I don't think there's a right or wrong way of doing this program at all, but it's, you know, whatever, you know, works for each one of us. And I know that, you know, abstinence is different for each one of us, and our food plans are different. Today I wanted to bring you guys my lunchbox, and this still have my dirty dishes from today. And, you know, my first step in the morning, what it is for me, you know, I am a compulsive eater. I am powerless over food. I wake up and it takes me a half an hour to make my lunch and my breakfast. So this is where I put my breakfast every day, and this is where I put my lunch every day. And the freedom that I get is that for 10 hours, I don't have to think about food. Sure, I have to warm it up and eat it, but I don't have to think about when I'm going to eat, what I'm going to eat. And being the type of compulsive overeater that I am, for me, this is like freedom. You know, for 10 hours, I don't have to think about food. And that has been amazing. So I'm grateful for that. And also, you know, so the food is like, you know, one head of the dragon, and they also call it the double whammy, you know, because it's a double whammy because you have both working against, I have both working against me. But this is a good time for me to also say that because of the type of compulsive overeater that I am, I need a lot of structure, and I really need to use those tools. You know, the meeting, going to 3 meetings a week, that's about my minimum. And, you know, it just works. And what I've learned in these rooms is that, you know, I have a lot of great ideas, you know, that I come up with all the time. But, you know, are they working or are they not working? So that's what I need to ask myself. And so doing those tools, making those phone calls, those outreach calls, reading the literature, having something positive to focus on. You know, one of the readings that we did today talks about, you know, our negative thinking. I have a lot of negative thinking, but there's a lot of tools that I can use every day to overcome that negative thinking. And, you know, I was talking to someone, and we were talking about, you know, we're like the little ducks, you know, that on the surface, you know, we just look like we're okay, and we're just kind of floating, but under the water, you know, our little feet are going like this, because, you know, I know what the alternative is for me, because I've tried it. Not, you know, I had a relapse where I had been abstinent for 2 years, and the minute I thought I was cured, you guys, that's the minute I started going south. And I did go, I relapsed, and I gained 30 pounds back. So I hope I don't forget that ever. So, you know, I do think of myself like, you know, I'm a lovely person, but I'm also a handful. I have a disease, and I need a lot of care. And I say this with the utmost compassion and acceptance of myself. If I don't pay attention to my body, I'll be like an exploding volcano. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And I just need to really be watching. I don't know if any of you eat Oprah or oatmeal and you cook it in the microwave. And if it cooks a little too long, you know what happens? It makes a big mess, just explodes. If I'm not staying in check with my body and with my steps, with my feelings, with my higher power, that's what happens. Exploding volcano, overflowing Oprah. So anyway, so I'm grateful to know that today. And now the real tricky part. You know, one head of the dragon, the allergy of the body, the food, the lunch boxes. No, I don't need this, I don't need that. The other side of it is the obsession of the mind. And that is my biggest problem. How many do I have left?
You're at 15 minutes.
Thank you. That is my biggest problem. It's this mind, you know. So when I got to OA, I was about 55 pounds heavier than I am now. So, you know, a lot of that fat, you know, was taken by my higher power. But the fat in between my ears, that's still here. And that's the one I really need to worry about. So, you know, that obsession of the mind. And I have a mind that tells me that I don't have a disease. One of my friends told me that. And it is so true. One of the readings that was the most helpful for me regarding this was chapter 3 from the Big Book. And I just want to go ahead and read this. And this really just completely, it was like a lobotomy for me, because we read this at my home meeting every week, and it was so helpful. So I'm going to go ahead and read this. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. So here's the obsession of the mind. And you know, I can tell you that I've had relief from cravings and the obsession to overeat for a long, long time. But the way the obsession of the mind comes back for me every day is, you don't need to meditate. You know, you don't need to sit down and write. And little by little, you know, this obsession of the mind that tells me, you can just be normal now. Look at how well you're doing. It's every single day, you guys. Every single day. Every single day I resist meditation and I resist what I know gets me to be well. So I'm grateful that this book showed me and tells me that. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were real alcoholics. And you know, when I just think of that word, innermost self, like to the deepest part of my being, you know, at the core, it's like, yeah, I am a real compulsive eater. There's no other way. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. And that's the one thing that we have in common. We all have different stories, you know, and we all come from different places. But the solution is the same. And the reason why we're here is the same. You know, we're all compulsive eaters. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control. I cannot tell you how many times this has happened to me. You know, for every next day in the morning, you know, the resolve, I'm going to do this, you know, to be face down in the food again. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period of time, we get better. Worse, never better. I've seen that also. And, you know, that part that says that the delusion that we are like other people has to be smashed, the visual that I have is smashed, as in take a baseball bat and smash a windshield. That's how I have to smash this illusion that I'm going to be like a normal eater someday. It's just not going to work. We have tried every unmanageable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. And, you know, I've done diet pills, I've done diet doctors, I've done starvation, you know, you name it. And I know most of us, before we got here, we tried everything. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule. And, you know, even knowing all of this, even telling you guys all of this, every morning there's that little voice that tells me, "You no, don't do this. Look at all the dishes that are over there that you need to do." It doesn't fail, you know, and someone told me one time, you know, you can always count with your higher power, and you can also always count on the disease. Always. Is that
20 minutes?
Okay, thank you. Do I have 5 more? Okay, thank you. So, you know, that for me, just knowing kind of what the disease looks like has been amazing. And, you know, knowing that if I try to do it on my own, I'm going to be doomed. So I need reminders. I need my sponsor. I need a recovery partner. I need my action partner to be reminding me all the time. I have reminders on my Outlook calendar or my computer, you know, things like the only, freedom, you know, the only way to freedom is eternal vigilance. Or there's a little saying that pops up on my calendar, you know, and I make it pop up every hour, and I make it pop up every hour to ask my higher power for direction, because that really is my only hope, you guys. When I try to do life on my own, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. The chapter of how it works, what it did for me is that it gave me the prescription of how to do this, you know, really how it works. So, you know, it goes on talking of, you know, how, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I think that a lot of times what happens to me is that I get sidetracked. Instead of following the prescription of the 12 steps, I try to do something better and more creative. And guess what happens when I do that, right? So the lie, you know, the lie that I'm told is that, you know, I'm fine. I can do this alone. I don't need to work all the steps. I know enough, and I can do this in my head. But that is not true, because I've tried it, and every time I do it, I get the same results. So, you know, I have like a chronic blind spot in my mind, and that hasn't changed. I'm 49. I don't think that's going to change. So, you know, the only thing that will get in between myself and compulsively eating is a higher power. You know, and it's that spiritual solution that the 12 steps bring me. What blocks me from my higher power, according to the big book, are my character defects. And I have been working that approach for several years, and it has worked every single time that I am willing to sit down and write. It has worked. So my character defects is what blocks me from my higher power. Now, my character defects is something that I grew up with. You know, it's like my operating system. How do I know when I'm in my character defects? You know, and what the big book says is that it shows up through fear and resentment. It also shows up just with simple, you know, irritability, restlessness. But the truth is that I just need to do a 10 step every day. That's the best place for me to be. So, you know, it's without the steps, I don't see what's going on with me. And, you know, I know the disease by the symptoms. Like, for example, you know, if I look at someone and I start judging them harshly, you know I'm in the disease. And, you know, today what I know to ask myself when I'm judging someone very harshly is, what am I afraid of? You know, and I can do a 10 step, you know, that, you know, where I write. And it always comes out. It is just amazing. I always think of the 10 step is really like an x-ray, you know, of what's going on with me. Because whatever disconnect I have, I can't see it without it. To do a 10 step for me is doing steps 4 through 9 very quickly, and step 4 that requires me to put it in writing, my fears and my resentments. And you know, I always think like I am a human with enhanced instincts. So these instincts react very, very, very fiercely, and the 4th step lets me see that. And, you know, the fifth part of the 10th step is that I need to share my writing with someone else, because the last thing that I need to do as an addict is to be by myself with my defects of character and be in isolation with the disease. When I do the sixth step part of the 10th step, I just ask myself the question is like, what would God have me be? And that's, you know, that's the main question. And a lot of times I can't do what I think God would have me be. But I can do some parts, and the other parts I can give them to my higher power. The seventh step is just knowing that I am powerless over my character defects, just as I am powerless over food. It's the same. I can just give them to my higher power. I can pray, fear prayer. You know, God, please remove my fear. Direct my attention to what you will have me be. And I'll tell you that sometimes it takes me 3 days. You know, I'd rather suffer and moan and be in self-pity and miserable than do this. But when I get, you know, into enough pain, I do this deeply. And then the eighth step part, have I harmed anyone? And the ninth step is, you know, do I need to make any amends or apologize? So, you know, living in steps 10, 11, and 12, it gets easier with time, but there's always resistance for me still. With meditation, I heard something really beautiful that someone talking about step 11 said at my meeting last night. And what they said is that the most important word in the whole 11 step, which is, you know, thought through prayer and meditation to improve conscious contact with God as we understood Him, that the most important word is only. You know, only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. And then the ultimate antidote, you know, which is our 12th step, which is service. You know, service. It'll get me out of funk. It's the antidote against my self-centeredness and my self-seeking, my selfishness. And, you know, anyway, so I know that this sounds like a lot of work, but compared to my life before I got here, where I had two little kids and I was homicidal, suicidal, I'll tell you that it wasn't a pretty picture. I do believe that today, because of this program, my life is just like a bowl of cherries where I can show up. I'll tell you that 99% of the time I'm sane, and maybe 75% of the time I have a lot of serenity. So with that, I just want to wish you guys a serene, a sane, an abstinent night, and thank you so much for listening. Yeah.